Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass Piancy. I'm joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Cass?
I'm doing good. I just got through a long drive, but we're joined by a special guest today, Ed Zitron, CEO and founder of Easy PR and author of the Easy Substack. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just another day in paradise. I spent most of the day reading the Examiner report for Celsius.
600 gripping pages.
It's like 85 pages with like a million pages of notes. It gave me a migraine. I had to go and like have a lie down for half an hour. Just read about Alex Mashinsky. I watched a bunch of his interviews too. And oh my God.
We've been talking about him for a really long time and Celsius for a really long time. I mean, it was such an obvious Ponzi scheme. I'm glad that's exactly what it's being called right now.
And also by its own staff. The guy was like, yeah, I'm a Ponzi consultant. It's like, why would you ever say that? Even as a joke.
Why would you start a group chat called Wire Fraud?
That is funny as hell.
Are you suggesting you're not currently in any group chats called Wire Fraud, Cass?
Okay, but I'm also not in charge of billions and billions of dollars of other people's money. So, you know.
That we know of.
Cascoin is broke, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, what we wanted to chat about today with you is NFTs, which I don't know.
You can
get us started on this. I know you wrote an article in November of 2021 called The Nihilism and Exploitation of the NFT Industry. You were really, really not into it, despite your ending being something along the lines of, even if many of these artists have good intentions, the entire thing is built on bad economics and bad for the planet type stuff. Do you want to get into how you feel about it right now?
Of course. So, bit of background on me. I collect original comic artwork, or at least I did until I ran out of wall space. So I am like the exact kind of mark for these things. I should be the person you can sell this to. So for this to bounce off me, there has to be something fundamentally wrong with it. And the fundamental wrong with NFTs is the same thing as before, which is they're pretty shit artwork. They're not a great vehicle for artwork. And they're not even a particularly good vehicle for anything else. I'm sure you guys have seen the Dookie Dash. Familiar with Dookie Dash? The wonderful thing for your investment in your Bored Apes, what you will get, is an Ebaum's World game.
That's already been exploited.
Like, oh, was it? Oh, good. I assumed it would happen.
Yes. Yes. People have reported exploits that have allowed them to get some of the high scores on it. So it's not even working as like the skill-based mint it's supposed to be.
What did they fucking expect? It is a terrible web game for a profit-seeking entity.
What was the name of the original game?
It's basically the game Tempest from the 80s.
It's such lazy design and there's no creativity behind it. And I think
at least they were open about the fact that it was just purely about shit.
Yeah.
What was that as well? Who is the market for this? Who is the market? If I was someone who was concussed enough to buy an $150,000 ape, and I was like sitting there telling all my dickhead friends, don't worry, this company Yuga Labs, they're working on some great things. And then this bullshit comes up. Oh boy.
But as you said, like, who's spending $150,000 on monkey pictures?
This isn't relevant, but there's one point I want to say, and that's that, like, the plot, the conception of the game is really stupid.
So glad you brought this up.
They get this key in this treasure chest. One of the apes has it. Then another one somehow drinks it during this party, and they realize he drank it. But instead of, like, waiting for him to excrete it and then just grabbing it out of the toilet, they somehow decide they're going to flush it down and then need to go into the sewers to retrieve it. The entire conceit of the game requires every participant to be stupid.
I've watched this 7 or 8 times because I hate myself. It is the same monkey who takes an atomic shit. The shit opens a portal through which another monkey comes with a box with a key in it, which is, again, too many controversies already. Then they decide, instead of doing anything with the key, they decide to have a party. Someone puts the key in a beer, and the same monkey, Jimmy the monkey, drinks the beer and then shits it out, and then they go, let's go down the toilet. I honestly would love to see inside of Andreessen Horowitz. He's just sitting there. It's like, the trial of Jimmy the monkey. He's like, what? What have you done? He loves it. He's like, yes, this is the height of culture.
This was definitely worth $450 million.
As long as he can sell it for more money, he really, really, really doesn't care.
He's escaped consciousness like a Final Fantasy endgame boss.
Cass, what you said there, I think, gets us back to the question, right? Is that it's pretty clearly like an exploitive and extractive creation, right?
Yeah.
It's not something of creativity. It's people trying to get whatever money they can out of the marks they've identified.
We didn't do any NFTs, obviously, but we had Mark Cuban on the show, and he was just very pro NFT. And I think our pushback disappointed everyone. Like we had such little pushback. Mostly, I think we just don't care that much about NFTs. If you have pushback, feel free. But it's like, it's not it's not what I am excited about in the cryptocurrency space.
No, that's certainly true. I find them incredibly boring. Part of the problem, I think, for us in that episode is, in my mind, my criticism was implicit in the thing I was saying. It's these NFTs that you would tie to a specific marketplace and then use in this way so you collect the royalty instead of Ticketmaster. So like in my mind, the criticism is clear in that question, but I think the way it ended up coming across is, oh, NFTs beat Ticketmaster.
I can see how someone might fumble that bag of logic. There are some people who don't realize Ticketmaster is just an evil company and you are just being evil like them. I think that's where all the Andreessen money and all the NFT money came from. It was just it goes back to Web3 as well, which is they just wanted to try and control the new internet. They thought this would work. It didn't really, because none of them knew about like the 7 or 8 different guys defrauding everyone. Those guys are a season 3 problem. Your point about Ticketmaster is excellent, which is, yeah, of course they wanted to take over that. They wanted that to happen. They were Dapper Labs didn't give a shit about fan experiences. They just wanted to take over from Tops. And the Bored Apes stuff, anyone who seriously tried to explain the fucking Bored Apes to me, oh yeah, the Bored Apes, it's the next Marvel. No, it isn't. God damn. You don't know the history of anything, let alone comics. I really got off on reading people like, yeah, let me tell you why this is important. It's just like, yeah, you fucking idiot. You are so worried about being wrong that you refuse to be right.
You won't believe how beautiful the Emperor's New Clothes are.
Yeah, but that was, I wrote a piece called The Emperor's New Blockchain. It was the same shit. Like, the idea of a unique digital thing is not a bankrupt idea. I really don't think so. However, I do not think you need it on the Ethereum blockchain. I do not think you need it on any of that shit. It's not better. Oh, you got a small television that I can look at my JPEG on. Jesus Christ, I'm going to feel depressed every time I look at that. And that's the thing, look, I got the weird shit behind me. I love collecting stuff. I should be the guy, but I'm not. It just bounces the hell off me.
Well, that's part of my whole thing where I find little reason for me to criticize them because I actually collect coins, right? Which is ridiculously stupid. Like, they're not investments at all. They're just a bunch of poor decisions. So I'm like, if a bunch of people want to make poor decisions, like, I can't hate on them that much for it. I'm wondering if you would disagree with that, like, that assessment.
I would say it was harmless if it was harmless, but it isn't. I think probably millions of dollars of people got conned by Top Shots, for example. By all those Wall Street Journal, New York Times stories about this guy made $1 million and all the LeBron James gif. All these people got conned. They are victims. You can say it's harmless until it becomes something that is a financially manipulated thing. And I guess all art kind of is, but there is something nakedly exploitative about the price stuff with NFTs. The people who get access to them early, it's the same shit as cryptocurrency regular. It's this thing where the rich just get richer because people use NFTs to monetize their influence. It all comes back to raw profit. These aren't a community. They are fundamental. I think they're securities, but I'm neither a lawyer nor particularly bright enough to run the Howey test. But it really is this deep, meaningful connection to cryptocurrency. If NFTs were entirely removed from the value side, I would have more respect. But something about Top Shots was really bad too. It's because they become these frothy fucking markets and people get taken by them. And it's bad. It's very bad.
The most frustrating NFT project to me, and I think the reason it was so frustrating is because of how exploitive it was in the way it ended up being covered, was Axie Infinity, right? Because you had the media coverage talking about how people were earning a living in this game. And like, where if you reviewed the token, like the economics of the system they were participating in, it was clear that it was not going to be a sustainable way for a meaningful number of people to make a living. But there was this period where those kind of stories were often run kind of uncritically. And I think that probably contributed to more people ending up participating in this system. A system like that, that is so clearly designed for exploitation and trying to take advantage of that flywheel to keep people hooked, feels a little bit different to me than people making his prints and selling them to whatever people want to pay for them, right? Because, like, one of them is, like, so clearly designed to try to hook people in and keep them connected.
Axie Infinity's fucking evil as well.
That's another level, and it's, I mean, it's fair to bring it up. Plus, getting hacked by North Korea is not something to brag about.
In the history of cryptocurrency, like, Axie Infinity fits in so much with what so many of these guys were doing before, right? Quigley, Yantis, and Pierce were all running their first digital asset game before crypto was a thing.
Yantis is in the EverQuest guy?
Yeah. Who now runs Wax with Quigley. He was a co-founder of Tether with Brock Pierce and them.
They're all involved in cryptocurrency, of course, though. Like, of course they are.
EverQuest Gold guys, of course, would be.
Yes. And, like, Brock Pierce and that group talked about developing a human supply chain in China that he could use to supply digital assets. And those were the words he chose. And so, like, when you look at Axie Infinity, it is the exact same arc that these guys have been participating in since before cryptocurrency even existed.
That's fair. But I also wanted to, because you quickly dropped in the mention of Beeple and suggesting, like, well, that's, like, totally different. And it is totally different.
Marginally different.
But I do think that Beeple moment got the attention of everyone. That was so much money, even if it wasn't really, or if it was all insider bullshit. And I reflect on it, and I'm like, there's no way that sells for that if he tries to sell it right now, right? Yeah. None of these things that, remember Justin Sun bought the Jack Dorsey's first tweet for $1 million? Like, that's worthless now. I assume that is worthless. Like, who's going to buy that and spend that much money anymore? That did get the attention of the world, and it probably brought in a ton of people who otherwise wouldn't be interested, including artists who got duped and stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think that it was just a false gold rush. And the problem is there are several bits to this. So the concept of a non-fungible token over here in a vacuum, not necessarily a bad thing, but it does not have to operate on Ethereum or any other blockchains. The problem is that digital artwork, I do not believe, is a thing. I don't know. They really badly wanted to try and connect Fortnite and kids being conned into buying costumes into adults being conned into buying shit artwork. And I'm just not sure anyone really understood what was happening over here in the first place. I've never enjoyed it personally, but, like, it's clearly a very good game. And people exist in that world and socialize within that world. And thus, the things they are buying are to interact with in that world. That has absolutely no relevance to any NFTs. Because, remember, the fundamental experience with every crypto game is dog shit. And Alexis Ohanian brought this up as well. This concept of, oh, you want to own your game. You want to own your stuff. But gamers don't care. Ask gamers. They're like, oh, do you want to own whatever you have? No, no one cares. No one gives a shit. And it's just profit seeking.
I think it's been, like, a major failure, honestly, on the NFT front in general, because they accidentally admitted by saying it was play to earn, which just was like, okay, so you're not interested in the gameplay, really. Like, this is strictly
a job.
Yeah, it's a job, and this is, like, about luck and loot box. Like, it's a cash grab, like, obviously. And so they're like, okay, that was a mistake. We shouldn't call it play to earn. Like, I don't know what they've diverted that name to, but as you're saying, is if the principle behind it is, oh, there's going to be a token, and that token's value is going to go, it has to go up. Like, if the token is always going to go down in value, no one's going to be interested in your fucking token. So the token has to always go up in value. Or if it's NFTs, like, what good are the NFTs if they go down in value? It shows me that their cards aren't interested in a fun game. I've spent God knows how many hours playing Stardew Valley, playing Kerbal Space Program.
A connoisseur. Oh, no, I respect it.
But I don't, like you said about EverQuest and WoW, it's like, I don't need an NFT to love this game. What is the value proposition actually, you know? Like, what are they trying to do?
Oh, I know this one. No, Alexis said this one because I argued with him about on Twitter. He's my psycho. So he was like, well, don't you want to get rewarded for your time invested in the game? The reward is the enjoyment I get out of it. Have you ever had fun?
Yeah, I was gambling once and won some money, and that was fun.
I live in Las Vegas, trust me. If I want to just gamble money, it's 15 minutes away if I choose a specific casino, or like 8 if I want a particularly worrying one. You want the biggest sign that NFTs are bullshit? I've not seen a goddamn it. I've not heard anyone talk about NFTs here. I've lived here 2.5 years.
Wasn't there an NFT conference that was in Vegas last year?
If think of something, it happened here. Both events and conferences in general. Well, just think of it like this. This town is built to exploit people legally. And that's very important. You can always walk away. The con is that you can do it anywhere. The con is not that you are forced to. In fact, there are big signs to say if you've got a gambling addiction. The NFT community, similar with Web3, is just so fucking pushy. It's hollow culturally. It lacks, none of these people have an appreciation for art. I'm not saying I do either, but like the shit behind me, for example, I love like Eric Tan, three pieces over here, and then there's Queens of the Stone Age poster. I have those because I like looking at them. In fact, that lost one is appreciated by like $950. Don't care, never selling it because I like looking at it. I don't think any of these people talk about liking anything. If they were enjoying it, if it seemed genuine, fine. I know people who are fans of things that are painful and awful and onerous and waste of money, Chicago Bears, for example. But it's this thing where there's no joy, there's no real loyalty. It's a loyalty to a clan almost. It's not like these people are collecting and being like, fucking hey, I love looking at this shit. I love looking at my artwork. I really do. I take great joy in it. I can tell you a little story about every fucking one of them because I genuinely enjoy it. If you have things around your house and you can't talk about them, can't tell a story, can't say whether they're meaningful, that's a problem. You think any of these people have like a meaningful story about like Jimmy the monkey?
I don't, but I do think that there is, this is, I guess this is my pushback on this, just because you mentioned sports. And I think it's like a fair analogy for some of the shit that I see on Twitter, even like the Bears, like, or let's use a better example in like the Chicago Cubs.
I was just making fun of them.
Yeah. But here, let's continue in the Chicago realm, the Chicago Cubs streak of not winning the World Series, some ungodly number, right? But like, I think a part of being a Chicago Cubs fan ended up being like, we can all be losers together. And isn't this great? Even when these NFTs, if they go way down in price, I do see like a sense of community on Twitter where like, and they love using that term. I hate using it, but I do see this sense of like them bonding over it, meeting each other, hanging out. Maybe you don't, Bennett. Maybe you guys disagree.
No. I don't disagree. I just think it's hollow.
Have you ever looked at the pictures of Bored Ape meetups? Like four dudes in cargo shorts and a Bored Ape t-shirt sitting at a hotel bar.
They all look like they want to die. And I wish they didn't, but you think about it. You walked into that room and your best case scenario is you have to tell people, yeah, I made a lot of money because I bought the right picture of a monkey. Worst case scenario, you're like, I paid $250,000 for a picture of a monkey.
I had all my monkeys hacked last week because I wanted to make them sparkly.
Imagine explaining that to someone normal. Yeah, I lost $500,000 because I clicked the wrong link. And so what did you lose? Like Bitcoin? No, one was a monkey with its melted eye. The other one was a monkey with a pirate hat.
The third one was a monkey wearing Nazi regalia.
Yeah, the one was the Nazi imagery monkey. And the fourth one was just a picture of a barrel of ooze that I had planned to put on one of the other monkeys.
My rocks are gone. My three rocks are gone.
All my rocks are gone. My picture of a fat penguin is also gone. But that's the thing. Imagine someone seriously talking about these things and being like, yeah, fuck yeah. Let's talk about penguin. You don't give a shit. Fuck you. I'm sorry. I just do not believe for a goddamn second, not a single one of these people looks at these things and is like, hell yeah, that's so cool. Like nothing about money. These things are ugly as shit. I've not seen a nice one. Even people's artwork's dog shit.
I'm not a fan.
Here's my question. Cause like I was obsessed with Pokemon as a kid.
Okay.
And man, that's been like the greatest cash grab in video game history. I don't know. They're all ugly. They're all stupid. But it is something fun and enjoyable about the game. But it feels very similar in the way that it's constructed.
It's where it's different, though. It's like what I said with Fortnite. What does Pokemon actually come back to? A very good trading card game and a very good series of games. They remake them, but they fundamentally improve on a theme other than the latest one, which is apparently very buggy. But they basically build off of a successful core, and they're ugly and weird, but they're cool. And there is a reason you like them, because you use them in battle, and they do stuff.
And they're fun.
I get the comparison, though. I actually understand it, because there is like the assumed cultural ephemera. But think about it. Where's that for the Bored Ape? Because this company is Yuga's take, what, $450 million? What have they done? They haven't even put out a shit cartoon. Ash Ketchum is technically 97 years old. And he just won the Pokemon League. He doesn't age. No one's asking why. I've been following Ash and his very long life without aging for many years. And that's quite meaningful. I was playing Pokemon games when I was in my teens. I still play them now. I'm 36. What can I do with a bored ape? What can I do with a pudgy penguin? What is the meaning behind them? What is the fundamental story that you can tell about one of those without mentioning money? Because that is the big problem. With Top Shots, you can go, oh, this is a one moment in a very long basketball game that I likely did not even acknowledge when I was watching. It made more sense with baseball, and they came out with that way too late. Way too late. The one game it kind of made sense with, and they fucked that up. I would understand if most NFT art was like really weird and cool. Like it was like interactive and you could like move shit around. It was kind of like a, I don't know, something built in like Unity or what have you, or Unreal Engine, that was like in a thing that you could like manipulate. That to me is kind of like a science museum thing. That would be cool. A picture of a goat dressed as Pharrell Williams does not interest me. And it also doesn't mean anything. It's procedurally generated, isn't it? Or not procedurally, it's just like generated 10,000 times. By definition, it isn't really that unique. It is a shell wrapped the same shell in most cases. And I realize there's more than just the PFP ones. Also, you could buy so many cats.
Is there? I mean, there nominally is, but like in terms of dollars in the market, there's not really
Most of them are just
projects.
Like, they're just PFP things. It is boiling culture down to nothing. It really is. My real conspiracy lunatic theory is that NFTs and things like that and crypto in general took hold because of a death of religion in society. I'm not religious personally, but people are more disconnected. It's harder finding a community and people are more desperate, cost more to live in this country and most countries, but especially America, go broke from medical debt. It's truly a tough time growing up here. And on top of that, you suddenly have this place where it's like, you can buy into this and you'll be rich in the future. And there's a bunch of people who will always kind of appreciate you because they're all trying to lie to themselves too. And I know that sounds like a joke, but I really don't mean it like that. It's a support group for a bad decision that all of you make so that you can keep making them together. And I think that is really what pisses me off with it. The economy is really what makes this so evil. And that's why there's so many PFPs as well.
I think that goes much deeper than strictly NFTs or cryptocurrency, unfortunately. Like, I do think that the gamification of finance, if not a wake-up call for hopefully American society, then too late for American society.
I made a similar point, not directly alluding to religion, but talking about how many of the people who end up attracted to cryptocurrency broadly are these kind of disaffected people who often, for well-justified reasons, feel as though their lot in life is unfair and their prospects for advancement are limited. And so being promised that this is unique, new, innovative, and can help you advance in society while you feel accepted into a community is a compelling pitch for people who are in that situation.
It is the description of a cult. It is how cults operate. It was not a deliberate cult. I do not believe Satoshi was there being like, or like Vitalik Buterin. I don't think he was. I do love when people are like, oh, look at Vitalik. It's like, do I have to? He's not a pretty fella. I'm sorry. He's not my type. But the thing is, these fellas, there are like cult leaders within this that are naturally growing. And the only reason they're not growing more powerful is because everything went to shit because some of the cult leaders weren't very smart. But the big personalities and the cults of personalities within this industry, way beyond just NFTs and Web3, are so, so rotten. The whole PFP imagery thing is fucking religious cult shit. It is. It's symbolism. It is semiotic hell. It is really bad. Like, had NFTs kept going up, we would have had like a fucking shooting or something. I genuinely think that there is a quasi-religious thing that could have grown from it. Gamifying finance like this is so, so fundamentally bad. Like I said, I live in Vegas. Look at what even the chance of winning money does to people here. Imagine if you added a gambling club where all your gambling friends went and no one at the casino told you you couldn't all sit at the table and show each other your wallets. But this is not a place that encourages congregations of people other than at the table and only at the table. I'm kind of glad everything crashed, because I really think NFTs could have been, they could be very dangerous in the future if they ever grow this kind of speculative value again.
Well, I mean, that's my next question for you. I assume you don't think this is like the end of NFTs, or do you?
I think it's the end of the massive speculative value for a few reasons. That I'll get back to the main one, which is the crypto. Everything's kind of falling apart with crypto, and I think we're about to see, even if it's going up, it's going to go right back down. But the thing is with NFTs is the speculative value grew from Bored Apes. Bored Apes were meant to be the next Marvel Comics. You were meant to, by buying into Bored Apes or a Bored Ape adjacent product, you were meant to be buying into the next Marvel Comics, and each one of these would be worth $150 million, and there's going to be TV shows about them. That was what was meant to happen. What's actually happened is Yuga Labs has proven to be painfully uncreative, just lacking in any fundamental vision or plan. It has become so obvious that Yuga Labs had no plan and doesn't really give a shit. What has happened with Bored Apes, other than the insane other side sale that for a game that's never coming out? Let's be completely honest. Let's be honest. Other side's never coming out. If it, like, based on Dookie Dash, do you really think Other Side, a full game where you can connect your entities, do you see that one popping up? No. I doubt Yuga will go under, but I doubt their value is going to stick. To your point earlier, Bennett, what are NFT artwork things other than PFPs? It's like, if PFPs crash, everything crashes, and they're crashing. No one cares. No one cares about this fucking sewer pass. I guess it costs $4,000 to play the toilet game, but like, last year that would have been 50 grand, and there would have been a fucking CNBC story about a 14-year-old who was selling them to people because he bought Bored Apes with the money he'd stolen from his grandmother. Like, it has no fundamental reason to keep existing. Respect to Top Shots, they keep on fucking that chicken, but I just don't see how any of these businesses continue, because they're not businesses. In Pokemon's case, Pokemon has a game. There's something that you come back to with Pokemon. So even a bad Pokemon game is still a Pokemon game. Pokemon trading cards, if you get a card you don't want, it's still usable in the game. There is still a fundamental reason there. But also, the biggest problem with NFTs, or one of them, let's be honest, is they really have gambled very hard about how much people care about unique. People care about one of 500, sure. Unique, at that point, the value becomes basically $1 million or $0. It's based on what the market will pay. And like in comic artwork, there are certain artists, like Arthur Adams, for example, which would sell for a couple of grand, depending on what you're looking at. Now, an artist doing a cover who you don't know might be $500. But those are decently established, and they're not 50 grand or 150 grand or 250 grand, unless you're looking at like, shit, I'm trying to choose an example. Dark Knight Returns, anything from that is worth like $250,000. But that's because it's one of the most famous comics of all time. Why is a monkey picture worth $250,000? It isn't. And when you remove all the money, because that's what you have to do to think, is this going to last? It's nothing. It doesn't operate with anything. The NFT gaming doesn't work. There's nothing really cool you can do with NFTs that you can't do with like a phone. Oh, I can do a ticket on the blockchain. Oh, great. A slower and worse version of the thing I already hate. Great. Cool. Oh, you get a digital collectible because you bought a ticket. Who gives a shit? I'd rather have some crap on my desk. I really would. I love collecting like funny little things like that. One of the most meaningful things I own is a foul ball that my friend caught by me at a Dodgers game. I remember that because I remember where I was. That to me is the meaning of artwork and art and collectibles. And no NFTs seem to have anything to do with that. None of them have any memories. None of these things feel even close to that.
Don't you think that like accurately describes some of the biggest artists of like the past several decades, even? Like, don't you think Damien Hirst artwork has no soul? But like, you know, Eli Broad, his homie, is willing to pay millions of dollars for it. And then, man, that value for all of Damien Hirst's work goes up significantly more, right? Like, it seems like same power play, different league. I don't know.
Except it's the entire industry. You can't buy cool, cheap NFT artwork because it does not exist. I haven't seen anything I like. I really haven't. Like, give me something. Show me something. Prove this to me. I would love to be wrong. I love finding new things. I'm open-minded, but it's been years of this dog shit. Years. I was working on a company that aggregated NFTs when crypto kitties were still around, like 2019. Still, we're still with fucking crypto. The cats had sex and they laid an egg. What the fuck are you talking about? I don't care. What is this? What? Oh, this other cat that looks kind of like. I got cats already. I know that's not how they work. Trust me. But Also, there's so many weird ways that art can be done in real life. And you have all the power of the internet. And this is it. This? Nothing, 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 nothing. It's all nothing.
When Mark Cuban was on the show, he specifically mentioned NFTs as, what was it, for reselling college textbooks. Yeah, yeah, we didn't push back on this. This is why I'm like, our listeners hated us after that episode, because our pushback was just so trivial. We were like...
My pushback at the time was like, yeah, it makes sense that the publisher would try to do this so that they can own more of the secondary sales. That doesn't mean it's good for the consumer.
So you had two different good points that you made in the worst possible way to be interpreted. Fuck yeah. So good. Because you're right. Yeah, of course the publishers would love that. They'd love the ability to own a little bit of your textbook forever. College textbooks are a huge scam. But yeah, the right way to put it was, so you want to find a different exploitative measure. But someone like that would never actually crumble. He would dance around the question until you just gave up.
You mentioned CNBC a minute or so ago. Do you have any thoughts on what kind of factors drove some of the breathless media coverage of NFTs?
Clicks.
It's true.
There you go. Clicks. This artist made $250,000.
Why were so many people interested in that stuff, I guess, is like the next question there. It's just everyone wanting to make money. Yeah, FOMO, huh?
People were desperate to feel like the future was here and they had some fucking hand on it. Because if you take out all the crypto shit, what are they going to do? Buy treasury bonds? Fuck no. Like, really, how are normal people making money now?
Treasury Direct, by the way. I try to shill that, you know. They're shilling NFTs. I'm shilling Treasury Direct.
Get your 10 grand a year worth of I-bonds. Nothing more exciting than I-bonds.
But that's the thing. Reality is boring and slow, and crypto allowed you to understand reality in a kind of enhanced, stupid way that felt right. Because, and people, a lot of people, when you said, hey, this doesn't make any sense, they're like, yeah, but stocks don't either. And it's like, okay, well, kind of, but no. And also, if any stock did anything they were doing here, a lot of people would be in trouble. Like jail.
I think we have examples of that with like AMC. That's when I think about the gamification of
that was. I am full scale like Jade Helm conspiracy theory on that shit. I do not buy for a fucking second that retail investors drove GameStop and AMC. I just do not do it. I think a few people jumped on it and some hedge fund was like, what? Fuck yeah, dude.
There's momentum hedge funds who saw it probably start moving and read the gamma and thought, hey, there might be a squeeze here. Because you're right. Reddit, Deep Value, or whatever his name was, is not moving most markets. That's just not the way markets work.
Markets don't work like cryptocurrency. You can't just have enough force unless you're a fucking hedge fund. I'm going to make my customers 2% this year, and you're going to lose your house.
I think there's kind of an interesting analogy in AMC there, because again, you saw a lot of the media coverage frame it as these little guys taking on the big system, right? And what really happened is most of the retail investors who saw this going up did not get in right at the beginning of it going up, but got in once the media coverage of it going up started, before it started going down.
Which I'm sure the hedge funds had not prepared for.
How does the media avoid the pitfall of covering a topic that, one, they know will get clicks, two, that is going up and as showing no signs of the trend breaking, right? Like, how do you counter that? I guess we push back on stuff like that, but like, how do you push back and still get the clicks? How do you push back and still get the attention and ad sales, I guess, would be the question.
Do you really need those clicks that bad? That is where it comes down to a very basic moral thing. If you do, perhaps you're in the wrong bit. Perhaps you have a problem. Because CNBC, and I will hammer the fuck out, I have friends who work at CNBC, I love them, but the shit they did with Celsius, the shit they did with NFTs, and the shit they've done with workplace rights is offensive and immoral. It's immoral. They should know they're doing it. But they did it for the clicks, and because in some cases, they did it for the hate clicks. It's the same reason like the Telegraph, I think this may have actually been hoaxed, but papers like the Telegraph will do like, this 28-year-old bought a house when he was 25. How'd he do it? And he got like 50 grand from his parents and also given the house. I think those are written specifically just to piss people off. And I feel like there's a degree of that with the NFTs. But also, I have this prevailing theory that the media was terrified of being wrong again. 2017, I believe, Kevin Roos at the New York Times wrote, "I was wrong about Bitcoin before." Well, he makes sure he makes the same problem twice. But I believe that there is a coterie of journalism that is genuinely scared of making the wrong negative call and not being a hater. And I think so many of them got humiliated because they had full-scale emperor's fucking dick and balls are out the entire time. And they're just like, "Looking good, sir. Fantastic." Because the emperor was giving them money and traffic. I'm not saying anyone was paid off. I'm just saying the clicks were coming in, and also everyone appeared to kind of agree. And then there were a few people on the side, me included, people you find further, like saying, "This kind of doesn't look great. And have you checked out one fundamental?" And they're like, "It's fine. Don't worry about it." Kate Rooney on CNBC was interviewing a banking executive once, I believe, on CNBC in 2021. And he was like, "Look, if someone's giving you 6% returns, like these crypto banks, I really just don't know how they're doing it." And Kate Rooney went, "Well, it's because they're lending to institutional invest." And it's like, holy fucking shit.
You may not know this as the institution, but the institutions are getting money from these.
There's always two answers to these. It's like, well, we have an arbitrage. And two, we're borrowing and lending to institutions. And it's like, so neither of those answer my motherfucking question. Like, you said nothing to me just now.
How is it profitable?
Arbitrage? What arbitrage? Tell me the arbitrage. Show me the magical arbitrage. Well, no, I can't.
That's a proprietary algorithm.
It's a super secret algorithm that keeps our coin stable.
It's just a bloke emailing another bloke. It always is. It's just a guy and emailing another guy.
It's three dudes in a Signal chat called wire fraud.
That's all Celsius was. It was just people emailing each other.
This is an existential risk. I think we're a Ponzi.
I mean, isn't that FTX?
FTX rocked, though. FTX was so stupid, but at least he, like, built something. SBF. So, sorry, he is FTX now. That's his hero name. But he built, like, software and stuff. There was, if you look, and I've stuck my head in the toilet of Celsius all day.
He didn't, though.
There was no
SBF didn't. There,
but, okay, I'm saying something functioned. Someone built something. Celsius literally appears to be a way they took money in, and they basically created the thinnest possible financial rails. And then they were just, like, outsourcing everything to some of the dumbest people in the world.
I think you just described FTX and Alameda Research as well, to be quite honest.
Okay, that also is very fucking funny.
He was taking customer money, giving it to Alameda Research. Like, that, it was,
yeah, yeah.
It was just the same fucking thing. It was exactly the same as Celsius, like, in
that
sense.
I thought they had, like, a software layer. To be clear, they're both deeply evil, and I hope they rot in the worst jails. But Celsius is like Alex Mashinsky investing in the worst things.
Like, FTX did have a at least moderately functional exchange. There's just a gap.
Yeah, like a product of sorts.
Yes. Like, but some people, especially the retail users who seem to not have fully appreciated what an exchange was supposed to do, had a tendency to think FTX was better or more unique than it really was. Like, the large scale traders who tended to use it had complaints about the matching engine. And we know there were issues with the liquidation engine based on how, like, some of the positions Alameda ended up in. So, like, they built something, but it was still flawed.
With Celsius, though, it was so much funnier because, and to be clear, SBF, FTX, very bad people. I'm not complimenting them. I'm saying that just reading this all day, there is a guy who made this company called KeyFi.
Jason Stone, we've talked about him before.
That story made me laugh because it was like, Mashinsky was like, "Yeah, I lost money on him before.
But this
that's
time,
how you know they're good." He's like, "Entrepreneurs always lose first." It's just like, what?
We're trying to find the trader who blew up their last fund because they went to the school of hard knocks and definitely will not do that again.
Yeah, this guy knows. He's learned his mistake. He's learned from his mistakes, which he made immediately, like straight away. They were like, "Hey, did you take any money?" He's like, "Yes." "What? No."
Guys, I think you should really tone it down. You guys are talking about Alex Mashinsky, who is the inventor of VOIP.
He's how we're talking. Oh my God. Every time I think about this stuff too hard, I just get really annoyed. Even a year ago, I wasn't this agitated by it. But now I think when I read the fundamentals, when I thought like a year ago, when I was like, this is probably all broken, but I didn't think it's going to be completely broken, scammy, but also so dumb, so goddamn stupid, so doofy. Oh, well, let's talk on wire fraud chat. Let me just hop on WhatsApp onto the crime group. What the fuck are you dipshits doing? Didn't any of you think, okay, what if we get caught? Not a single goddamn one of them.
They're greedy and not as smart as they think they are.
But also, none of them were like, I'm going to take $50 million in cash and go to a non-extradition country.
Or die.
Well, have you heard from Sam Trabuco?
That's true.
Yeah, Sam Trabuco is gone. Respect, man. If you're going to be a criminal, off of you. Go.
Why are these journalists asking where I am? I'm going fast over the water, y'all. That really should have been a warning sign like 3 weeks before CoinDesk ran their report. That Sam Trabuco was like, what do you mean? I'm out of here.
Where am I? You'll never know.
Stop asking.
Stop asking because this account will burn. By the way, fuck you all.
One thing I noticed during the NFT boom was there was a lot of really half-assed Fortune 500 NFT projects. Pepsi doing a random NFT drop. Mercedes doing an NFT collaboration. Do you have any thoughts on what drove these companies to not only launch NFTs, but do it in a way where it seems like they didn't actually even care whether the project succeeded? Is it the same, just don't want to be wrong? Better to like plant a flag out there and say we tried this than to like avoid it?
I will tell you exactly how this happened. Call from executive. What's an NFT? Well, I don't know. Great. Cool. So we're doing a Ghostbusters movie. You want 1,000 little marshmallow guys? I don't give a shit. They're going to make us money? Probably not. Okay. Click. And it's like, I think I have to. And so the marketing department was probably told, do this as cheaply as fucking possible. I want this to be light because when this goes wrong, I need to not have spent much money on it. And also they were kind of gambling that they'd be worth a lot of money. Are there every single movie dreams of doing like a Revenge of the Jedi style thing where the poster's worth money? They've all been dreaming of that for years. They all, so Revenge of the Jedi is the old title for Return of the Jedi. There's two different two different posters they mothballed. Long story short, worth a lot of money. You remember when Star Wars Episode 1 came out? So they did the toys in the same shape as the old boxes. So they tried to make it kind of symbolic. They were just trying to like, can I make some fucking money off of this? And then it didn't work and they went, oh, gives a shit. Ubisoft was the funniest one though. No one cares.
I forgot they did that.
Yeah, me too.
I totally forgot Ubisoft did that NFT initiative. And like there was a bunch of people on Twitter who were like, this is the future. All the gaming companies are going to come in after this if Ubisoft is on it. And then like they quietly abandoned it or something like 3 months later. I mean, Coinbase NFTs market, which they invested $100 million in a building, has done like what? No volume. And it just came out that no longer will creators be able to drop new collections using their market.
Nice.
$100 million of investment.
How did it cost them $100 million?
Remember the Bored Ape movies they were going to do?
How has Meta lost $23 billion building the metaverse?
I don't know, man. The whole thing's just so damn exhausting. I just get so confused. Like, I'm like, who thought this was a good idea? And I've realized that no one did. No one thought about it for a second. No one thought, like, is this a good idea? Will this make money?
Some people did make money.
Some people did make money.
Yeah, the worst people.
Yeah, Mark Andreessen.
One of my favorite moments, like, in the Bored Ape saga that, to me, feels like the Bored Ape story in a microcosm was when Seth Green bought or obtained, let's say obtained, several of the Bored Ape NFTs and announced his intention to make a TV show with them and then got fished. And lost all of his apes. Had actually committed to doing the thing that, like, Yuga had pitched as what Bored Apes was going to be.
He then lost the copyright to it.
Because it's supposed to be tied to the apes. Like, the license to use it.
But then it's turned out it isn't now. It is not tied.
That's what Ryder Rips maintains, is that it's not actually tied to it. And I can't deal with that case. So that's as far as my knowledge on it goes.
If I was a judge, I'd just be like, I don't care. I'm meant to be helping with murderers and shit. I don't give a fuck about you guys.
Next person who says the word ape is being held in contempt of court. And that's my ruling.
It's funny because, well, funny is probably the wrong word. Funny, the other kind. But it's just, I'm trying to think of a single huge, I've not heard a compelling argument. Not one. I really am. I've not heard one person who can explain the value beyond sometimes Rolexes are worth money.
And like many of the collectible markets that end up having some kind of value, like Rolex, are very intensely manipulated, controlled, whatever, by the central party creating the asset.
Yes.
Like, that's the reason Rolexes have a resale value, is because there's limits on, like, the circumstances in which they can be resold and how many new ones are created and things like that. It's the reason diamonds are valuable, even though, again, like, there's basically no resale market in those, too, because De Beers is very controlling in how many they release it in the market and how many are available and things like that. And so, like, even when they point to some of these things, they're using it in this way where they try to pretend it's community-owned, community-controlled, something like that. But the things they're alluding to are always created and controlled by these powerful central entities.
And also, diamonds are not worth that much. Like, diamonds are not a high-margin business. And also, they have a fundamental value that has been crushed by the forces of capitalism and then international laws around blood diamonds and the GIA. They are heavily controlled. And I think NFTs are, because it turned out like 90% of the volume was like 10 guys. It has the appearance of being a natural process without actually being one. Every one of these is beholden to the value of Ethereum or Bitcoin. There's so obvious wash trading with so many of them. So many of them are scams. It's like, I wish it was something cool. I really do. I would love some cool digital shit, but this isn't it. None of this needs to be decentralized. Nobody cares.
For what it's worth, volumes are up a little bit. This is going to be the counter to this, is that volume is as big now as it was like about a year ago or so.
Cass, I love that your steel man version of their argument is, look it, it's a cockroach. You can't kill it. No one wants it there, but it's alive.
That's right.
That's actually true, though.
Yeah. Ed, any other thoughts?
I am all out of them. I think I've ejaculated every thought I have on this subject now. I need to go and throw myself in an icy lake. Thank you for having me, though.
Nice final podcast.
Icy lake is still more pleasant than discussing NFTs.
Yeah, pretty much.